We talked offline here a little bit about Trump's strategy for coming to Minnesota. It seems like he doesn't have much to gain, really, by coming here. What's your take on why he did this at this late date?
Well, I think Trump came to Minnesota because he's desperately looking for alternative ways to get the necessary electoral votes to win the presidency. He's got to win some blue states, and blue states are tough for him. I think he came to the Twin Cities because he covers both western Wisconsin and the Twin City markets, and he's hoping for a breakthrough in either Wisconsin or Minnesota.
It's kind of a long shot for him, isn't it? Because that western Wisconsin media market, that portion of the Twin Cities media market has a small population. It seems like it's probably already in his camp anyway.
Right.
But eastern Wisconsin is kind of more the problem for him, isn't
right.
it?
Right. Well, actually, Trump has major problems in the suburban ring around Milwaukee that is usually reliably Republican. And he canceled a rally there in order to come to the Twin Cities. So I think it's the fact that the Trump campaign doesn't have a lot of good options right now for getting more electoral votes, and they decided to take a risk and try Minnesota as well.
Yeah, and the problem with the Milwaukee suburbs is because of Paul Ryan, right?
Basically. Yeah, I think very much so.
Let's talk about the flip side of the coin, and that's FBI Director Comey's comment yesterday, which kind of took the, I guess what's been termed the September surprise, right?
Mm-hmm.
And somebody said turn it into the November dud. Does it have any effect on Hillary Clinton? Does it give her any momentum, or does it just stop the bleeding?
Well, I think stopping the bleeding is the immediate effect of the Comey announcement yesterday. And whenever you stop bleeding, that's a plus for a candidate. So it's late news. There are still significant numbers of undecided voters, and any positive late news for a candidate can make a difference.
And Hillary Clinton, is it fair to say that this is her race to lose?
Well, I think we have to say that Hillary Clinton has a small lead. I don't think she's a prohibitive favorite at this point. There are ways Trump could win as well, so this election is not in the bag yet.
But Minnesota would not play a role in putting it in the bag for one of them or the other, I assume.
Well, if Trump carries Minnesota, he's the next president, no question, but I think that's a long shot.
Yeah, I would think so. That would make sense. Hey, let's go over to some of the other items, the congressional district races.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just go down them. Let's take the second and the eighth last, but let's take numerical order in the greater Minnesota ones, okay?
Okay.
First congressional district, Tim Walz is the winner, probably?
Yes, Tim Walz had a fairly close re-election contest 2 years ago, but during a presidential year, the DFL often does better, and he does not have a well-funded or particularly credible opponent, and so Walz is definitely the favorite in the first congressional district.
Okay, we'll skip the third, fourth, then the fifth, because they're primarily metro. Sixth congressional district, Tom Emmer goes back, I assume?
Yeah, the 6th Congressional District is the reddest district in Minnesota. It is a pretty reliable stretch of land for Republicans, and Tom Emmer is a strong favorite in the 6th District.
The 7th District, Colin Peterson, I assume, continues there?
Right. Well, it's one of the biggest. The 7th District is geographically one of the biggest congressional districts in America. Colin Peterson does not have a well-funded and well-known opponent. He had a scare 2 years ago, but he's very much the favorite in 2016.
And finally, last but certainly not least, let's talk about these other two remaining congressional districts. What do you think is going to happen in the 8th?
The 8th district is perhaps the most expensive U.S. House race in the country. There's all sorts of outside money going into that race. This is Trump territory now, and that may actually make a difference in giving Stuart Mills the edge over Rick Nolan, but it'll be a very close contest in any event.
Does Nolan is really struggling because of problems with the Iron Range economy. There's some questions about whether, in fact, it is indeed rebounding, right?
Right. Jobs have fled the 8th District. Rick Nolan hasn't been able to reverse that trend. It's hard for any one person to do that. But the DFL has been losing votes in the 8th District over the years, and that works to Mills' advantage.
So if that's the case, if Mills does indeed win there, then that's another flip-flop for that district, isn't it? Because it was Chip Kravac, and then it's Rick Nolan, and now it'd potentially be Stuart A. Mills again.
Right. Well, you know, for many decades, it was a deep blue, reliable Democratic bastion. It's not anymore. It's a swing district. It's competitive for the two parties, and the trend has been towards the Republicans.
And now let's move down to the second congressional district. And that is an open seat because of John Klein deciding not to run for re-election. Who would you give the advantage in that district?
Well, I would guess that Angie Craig has a small advantage there. And one of the reasons is that she has outspent her opponent by a dramatic margin. The last numbers I saw, 3-1 over Jason Lewis. And in a competitive race, that can make a big difference when there's no incumbent.
How is that that has happened, Professor? Because here you have a very well-known person in Republican circles, Jason Lewis. He's been at it for, well, decades, really.
Mm-hmm.
And how is it that he has not been able to get a bigger pot of money?
Well, Jason Lewis has a number of prominent Republicans who are not friends of his. You'll remember that John Klein did not prefer him in the primary. His talk show or his radio talk show history has been quite controversial. It's been used against him. He's a bit of a maverick. He'd be a fairly unpredictable member of the U.S. House, and I think that's why a lot of Republican money has stayed away from his campaign.
Let's move on, if we can, to the legislature, which is, opens up a whole different can of worms. But with what has happened in the last couple of weeks, the health care issue has come to the forefront. But let me pose the question a little bit differently.
Yeah.
How much is the presidential contest going to influence this versus how much is this controversy over health care, health insurance premiums? How are those two going to play out, do you think, ultimately tomorrow?
Well, first of all, the MNsure issue is owned by the Democrats because it was passed by the Democrats on a party line vote, and Republicans have been emphasizing all the MNsure problems as being Democratic problems. So that's definitely a negative for the DFL on Election Day. When you look at the presidential race, we essentially have two Minnesotas. In Minneapolis and St. Paul, Ramsey and Hennepin County, Hillary Clinton's winning by over 2-1. Trump is competitive and maybe even has a small advantage in the rest of Minnesota. Now, a lot of the competitive state House and Senate races are in greater Minnesota outside of Hennepin and Ramsey County. And that's where the GOP can perhaps get some benefit from Trump's support out there.
And that combined with the health care concerns could perhaps tilt more seats their way?
Yeah, at this point I would think that the Republicans are favored to keep control of the Minnesota House, but I think that DFL is likely to keep control of the Senate simply because their majority right now is such a large one.
So Mark Dayton finishes out his term, the final 2 years of his term, the legacy years, or at least what I assume he would hope would be legacy years, with divided government.
Yeah, I think that if you get a divided government for the last 2 years of Mark Dayton's governorship, it will be a frustrating time for him because his agenda will face great difficulties.
Did he, and other folks I've talked to have posited this, when he said the Affordable Care Act is no longer affordable, did he shoot himself in the foot in terms of possibly having a Democrat-controlled House for the last two legacy years of his administration?
Well, the governor's comment that the Affordable Care Act is no longer affordable has found its way into all sorts of Republican advertising. Donald Trump, when he was here over the weekend, referred to it. It is really a toxic comment for Democrats, and it's hard to find another Democratic official of comparable stature who has given so much aid and comfort to the partisan enemy this season.